the whole positivity movement that we've talked about and mindfulness and everything. A lot of people are misusing that. They're taking, there's just another way to bury. I'm just gonna look at the positive, look at the positive, look at the positive, and the tears are coming down their face and they don't even know what they're there for. Positivity is a result. Got to deal with all the negative emotions, let them be, let them dissipate, and then positivity will come into that space.
All right, man, got a great show for you today. My guest this week is Dr. Laura Dabney, and I want to say thanks to my friend Jamie Masters for putting us in touch. When I learned about what Dr. Laura does professionally, I thought we have to have her on the show. See, she has a practice out of Virginia Beach, my old hometown, by the way, so we had good time catching up about that area. I love Virginia Beach. But I will tell you that she works with very high-profile men in her practice, people that would often park their cars down the road to come see her because while they've been super successful in many areas of their life, they're struggling in other areas. Perhaps their own emotional state, perhaps their marriage, and other things that she would help these men with. And so when I learned about this, I thought, oh, so many of the guys listening to the show are high performers. You know, they're people who are very successful in many areas of life. And, you know, sometimes, and I don't know if you've ever felt this way, but I felt a little embarrassed to admit that I had these challenges in my life. And so finding help was difficult. I would say either like, oh, it's just a phase I'm going through and I just got to suck it up, get past it. If I ignore it long enough, it'll just go away. I'm not going to bring attention to the negative. I'm going to focus on the positive. And while some of those strategies can be helpful at times, other times, if we don't address the problems that we face, if we don't get to the underlying issues in our lives, the thing that's, as she explained, in our subconscious mind, which is infinitely more powerful than our conscious mind, we're going to deal with these issues over and over again. And then, you know, you're going to find that if you don't deal with anger, you're going to blow up and end up punching holes in walls or, you know, having a meltdown. If you don't deal with sadness, if you don't deal with the feelings of neediness and why, you know, sometimes we see those words or hear those words and we think of them as being completely weak. Signs of weakness, like, hey, I've got ways of dealing with that. But oftentimes the ways of dealing with it are covering it up or ignoring it and not actually addressing the issues. So I wanted to have this conversation today, which I know many of you are going to enjoy. You know, what I just mentioned, you know, some of the things that were highlights for me during the show is like how she said, vetting doesn't need to be always out loud. I thought that was really interesting. She taught me ways I can vet in my own head to where I don't have to speak them out loud. You'll understand as you listen to the show. She talked to me about how to identify whether or not we actually have issues with anger, neediness, or sadness. And some of us have them and we don't even know it. But that this is actually in my own personal life dealing with this a little bit where my wife would say, hey, I think you've got anger issues. And I'm like, I don't have anger issues. But even though I'm kind of joking around, but even though I would say, I don't think I do. But now looking back and after having really addressed it, there were things that were really making me angry and I wasn't dealing with it in a productive way. And so we're going to get into that during the show today, how to stop anger from turning into like major blowups. We're going to talk about how to stop neediness from turning into the opposite, which is like where you become a total giver and ignore your own self and your own needs, but that you actually just turn the attention outward 100%, and you'll see that there's danger in that too. And she calls it, what did she refer to it as? Pathological altruism. And then also how sadness can be identified, where sometimes we overdo it with joking around and being extra happy, but that we don't address these actual feelings of sadness that might show up in our lives. Now, listen, I'm all for highlighting the positive. I'm all for finding out what's working and do more of that. And I'm fully on board with the fact that we don't have to get hung up on every negative thing. And that if we did, we probably wouldn't get much done. But I'm also not one to ignore it. And I've tried it, by the way. I've tried ignoring a lot of these things and just pushing through and toughing it out. And the problem is that it has not worked for me long term. Those are good band-aid type solutions at times. But much of my great transformations in my life that I've personally experienced, many of those have been because I've addressed issues head on. And I think it's really important to do that as part of the process. So we're going to have a great conversation today with Dr. Laura. And I will tell you that, if you've got any questions, join the conversation on our Facebook page. And we can, all these podcasts are really a spark to a deeper conversation that we can have online or in our membership area. We have these conversations live with 2 monthly calls. Also, Laura mentions at the end, there's a link to a site. She put it together for the Front Row Dads. She actually gave the wrong link. So just make note, and I'll put this on the show notes at frontrowdads.com, but lauradabney.com/frontrowfactor. lauradabney.com/frontrowfactor is a place you can go get connected and get more information at the end of this show. Guys, before we get into it here with the interview, just want to take a moment, and I wanted to thank somebody out there who, I don't have an official name on this review, but somebody who wrote a review for this podcast. And boy, these mean the world to me. If you haven't written a review, please do, man. This is just, I love reading this. These are like the highlight of doing this show. And right now we don't have any sponsors. So all of hosting this podcast is all out of pocket, paying for the production and the hours to find the guests and set it up. And this is a way that if it's providing value for you, I would love for you to just write a quick review. But so here's one that just came in, made me smile. I was telling my wife, this makes me super happy. So it says, for the last 2 years or so, I've been on an absolute mission to become a better man, husband, and father. It is really difficult to find men in my local sphere that are as intent on this journey as I am. And I found my tribe, and I don't have to feel like I've gone overboard because I won't settle for mediocrity in my relationships. This podcast has shown me what greatness can look like through John and the incredible insights and experiences from the guests. I've implemented a number of things that I've learned, and I've seen myself and my family grow. I won't spend my time listening to something that's not applicable and actionable, and this is. It is an important part of my family university that is an integral part of my family's life, and I can't thank you enough for helping me to step into my better self. So D. Shelley Baum is what it's labeled as. So whoever you are out there, man, thank you so much for writing that. Really appreciate it. And those reviews mean the world to us. If you want to write a review, you should be able to go to frontrowdads.com/review. If you have access to iTunes, it'll pop up that page and connect you immediately to where you can write a review. So thank you so much for supporting the show by telling us what you think. And every time you write a review, it helps other people to want to say yes to the show. And then we can pass along this information to more dads out there and help the world rise together. Guys, last quick thing I want to mention is that we are going to be opening up our membership for Front Row Dads around Father's Day. So if you would like to become a part of this brotherhood where we have these live calls, you can ask questions, get help, you can join small groups, you can be part of the larger organization, and you get invites to our live events and our retreats, then just make sure your name is put in the email section at frontrowdads.com. It's just right there on the homepage. Just pop your name and your email in. And as soon as we open up, we'll notify you with an email and tell you how you can apply to become a Front Row Dad as a member. If you like this, then you'll love that. So I would love to have you be part of Front Row Dads. And we want to have the best guys in that group, you know, men with wisdom, but who are wise enough to know that there's so much more to learn. Anyway, guys, also, if you haven't had a chance to check out our new Thursday show, I'm just putting out a solo episode. Love to hear what you think about that. Shoot me an email, john@frontrowdads.com, and tell me what we're doing great here and what you'd like to see better inside of this brotherhood so that we can support you. Or let me know what topics you want to hear about or people that you want to hear from. Let me know. I'd love to hear from you. And lastly, I mentioned this just a moment ago, but join the conversation on Facebook. Just go to frontrowdads.com/Facebook, and there's a place you can ask questions and share your wisdom with other like-minded men and guys that aren't so like-minded. And that's how we grow, right? Be around people that are even, that are different than us. We'll have some great conversation there. That's it, guys. Let's get into this interview with Dr. Laura Dabney. Enjoy this one. Let me know what you think at the end. All right, Laura, welcome to the Front Row Dads podcast. So excited that you're here. Thanks for joining.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm very excited.
Now, we haven't had a lot of women on the show, and mostly because my interest is in learning about dads and what they're doing and what it's like to be married and what's working there. But, you know, I also think it's really valuable to get a female perspective on some things along the way. And that's really important in your marriage. On this podcast, we just happen to focus more with men. Mm-hmm. So why I'm really interested in chatting today is because you have a really unique take on a lot of the high-performing men that you work with. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to see if we could kind of cultivate some wisdom from all the many conversations that you've had in your practice. Right? And working with men. So,
right.
You ready to have a deep dive?
I'm ready. Got my scuba gear on. I'm ready.
That's right. Right. And also for everybody listening in, you're in your office right now in Virginia Beach, correct?
Right.
Mm-hmm. awesome. Yeah. And how would you sum up what you do? I would have already teed up the intro to some degree, but when people ask what you're up to these days, what's your answer?
Well, it's interesting because it's more complicated than it should be. I went to medical school, so I have an MD, but I don't work with medications like most MDs. We do residency training. Residency is training. I did residency training for 4 years in psychiatry, so I learned everything about psychiatry, meaning therapy, emergency psychiatry, medications, everything. But I really liked doing the therapy part.
Yeah.
But that's usually what PhDs or master's degree people do. So mm-hmm. I actually do mostly therapy. And then I got this niche of working with executive men with relationship problems when I started advertising myself as the privacy MD. I didn't work with insurance. I had a circular setup, so nobody ever saw anybody who coming or going. And then all next thing I knew, I had these professional executive men coming to see me, and I got really interested in why that was.
Yeah. And let's just get right into that, because that's our audience. That's many of the men that are listening today. And so let's talk about that. Let's talk about why they were coming to see you and what you were learning through these conversations. And we already talked about this, that of course there's a privacy element here. So we're not talking about any real men. We're talking about an average of the men, if you will, or we're going to take looking at many of these stories and saying, hey, what was showing up time and time again? So maybe let's start there. What was one of the most common recurring challenges that these high-performing men were facing in their lives? And ultimately, let's get to what fixed that for them.
Well, that was the first thing exactly that I looked at. I didn't even notice this, by the way. I mean, I didn't even notice also my practice was filling up with these executive men. It was my mentor said, usually women therapists have more women. You should probably look at why you have more men. And it turned out this whole privacy piece of the advertising was huge. I mean, I had men, not only were they interested in privacy, but in, even though I said that, they were parking down the street and walking in so that no one would see them. And it was a huge deal for them. But it came down to, John, was they were incredibly embarrassed and ashamed that they had a problem in their life they could not fix.
Yeah.
I mean, these were the golden boys. You know, everything went well for them. It wasn't that everything was easy for them, but they could take any problem, athletic problem, school problem, family problem. A lot of them took on jobs to help their families. I mean, it was just incredible. They could turn anything around and make it work. But now they're in a relationship with somebody or not in a relationship with somebody, and they can't figure it out. And the embarrassment and frustration was just huge for them.
Yeah. What do you think got them to say yes to visiting you? What pushed them over the edge to finally come in and have the conversation?
Well, they were also smart enough to know that most psychiatrists, at least at that time, this has changed quite a bit, at least in Virginia Beach, but I would have to, if I worked with insurance companies, I'd have to fax off their information, private information to insurance companies. They could know the receptionist. They could know the people in the waiting area. They were so embarrassed and ashamed, they didn't want to take that step in the door. They just didn't want to. Or maybe they thought they knew me. Yeah. So they didn't want to deal with any of that. So when I took that piece away, that's what got them to step in. They weren't going to see a receptionist. They weren't going to have anything faxed off. It was just me and them. And that was the only comforting piece that they had to finally walk in the door.
And how did they hear about you? Is this all word of mouth?
This is interesting. I was actually, now I started opening my practice in 2000. I was the first individual mental health practitioner to advertise in the newspaper in the area.
And that's how they were finding you?
That's how they find me. It was considered taboo. In fact, doctors weren't allowed to advertise in the past. Finally, hospitals were able to advertise. And then slowly, it was still considered, I don't know what the word is. People thought it was desperate or something. The whole medical field thought this was something we shouldn't do, slimy, I don't know what the word is. But yeah. I'm thinking, I got a business. I don't get a lot. We didn't get any business training in med school, but it's a business. You got to advertise. And at the time, the best advertising was the newspaper. And I got this really great person to do these really classy ads. She was great.
And was it super targeted towards relationship challenges that somebody might face? Or what were you advertising for? What would a guy see that would say, yeah, that's for me?
I was just doing the general advertising. I mean, that piece about dedicated to patient privacy was just a little component.
Yeah.
But it was mostly anxiety and depression. Those are the two biggest things I saw. You know, everybody says, you got to find a niche. And really the niche found me. I was like, I like everything. You know, I would treat anybody with therapy. You know, this doesn't matter to me. So those are the two broad terms I used at first. And then as the men started finding me, then the niche started developing on its own, sort of.
So were these high-performing men seeing anxiety and depression and then saying, yes, that's for me?
So commonly, I see this all the time too, they just know something's wrong and they can't put it into words.
Yeah.
So sometimes they say, I'm anxious or depressed. That covers quite a bit.
Yeah.
So yeah, they would come in with that chief complaint, we call it, the first thing they say, but it inevitably ended up being a relationship problem. It's funny, people still do this. They would call and say, I've got a relationship problem.
Yeah.
They say, I've got a problem and I don't know what to do.
Yeah. And what percentage of men do you think that these high performing men you see have anxiety or depression? What percentage? And by the way, not just those that come see you, but like if you were to take 100 men, right, randomly, that are these executives that you might see or these entrepreneurs, these business owners, what percentage do you think are out there right now struggling? And maybe they've admitted it to themselves, maybe they haven't. Maybe there's stats that exist on this subject, but I'm just wondering, like, how many are really suffering out there?
You know, I don't have that answer. My population is skewed. So I don't, of course, every 100% of people come in and see me have some symptoms of those. But yeah. I have seen stats in business books where the most successful entrepreneurs or professional people, a high rate of them have some kind of depression or anxiety kind of drives them.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that, you know, it's a problem, but it could also lead to, I think a lot of people who have like workaholism, for instance, and are doing it to the extent that they're actually successful, I think a lot of them, that's a cover up for some emotional problems.
Do you think it's on the rise?
That's a good question. I think for men, this is the other interesting thing I was seeing. I went to Smith College. So I was part of the Seven Sisters School, all women's college. I was the 10th class of Exeter Academy to admit women. So my viewpoint was that men had all the advantages and all the privileges and, you know, poor women, blah, blah, and we're trying to get in there. I'm not saying that's not real, but that was a big issue topic at the time. And then, but what I was seeing and noticing, and it's been talked about a lot, is that but men have commit the highest rate of violent crimes and are the victims of violent crimes the most. I was fascinated by that dichotomy. How is that possible? And then in walks into my door, in walks the man who's got a personal, that personally, they've got everything on the one hand, money. I mean, they're like stars in their neighborhood or their town or their city, and yet they're so miserable at home or in their relationship. And so that economy is there facing me again on that level.
Yeah, it's really interesting. We have a lot of territory we could talk about here.
I could talk all day, John.
This is like, I'm asking myself, boy, how do we sum up some of these big ideas? Let me get to this anxiety and depression for a moment. So first of all, what's the root cause of that? If somebody is feeling anxious and depressed, you could easily say, there's no reason to be. You have so much going right for you. So why do they feel that way? And then what helps them to get through it?
Well, you just described when they come in the door, inevitably they tell me all, I've got everything. I don't understand why I'm not happier, feeling better, feeling less anxious, less depressed, whatever it is. The root cause tends to be that, in fact, because they were so successful in their adolescence, young adulthood, and forward, they often didn't get, it's not they didn't face adversity, but they overcame adversity almost too much. So they didn't have with their parents this, whatever reason, they didn't get that give and take that a teenager should have with their parents. Teenage years are tumultuous and there's a lot of emotion because they're practicing, right? They practice with their parents' intimate relationship, how to give and take and how to get those feelings out on the table, how to deal with those feelings effectively. And a lot of them miss that for a variety of reasons. So what the root cause is, they don't know their own feelings. They don't know themselves. And that's where I always start.
Mm. How do you get somebody to know themselves? Like I imagine somebody's listening right now and say, all right, I want to know myself better then. And so how do I do that?
Such sneaky. It's the unconscious. Okay. I don't know if you've read any of those studies. Every study that shows whether we are consciously making decisions or unconsciously making decisions, our unconscious wins out every single time.
Yeah.
So to get to that is tricky because the brain, like the rest of you, doesn't want to feel pain.
Yeah.
So we don't want that. That's why we have reflexes. When that ball comes to you, shut your eyes, you don't want to feel the pain. Well, we all do that to ourselves on some level. It's healthy and to some degree. So when we feel sadness or rage or the three top, neediness, sadness, rage, those tend to go underground.
Yeah.
Fine. But if you're emotionally healthy, you unpack that bag at some point. There are times at work you can't. deal with these things. But the problem is these men just keep pushing, shoving it down, hoping, well, it's going to go away. But yeah. No negative emotions go away without dealing with them.
Yeah. And you mentioned this, neediness, anger, and sadness. I've heard you refer to those as the enemy emotions.
Yes, the enemy emotions.
So let's dig into that a little bit, because those are big. And it's specifically, and we can, not that I want to turn this into a therapy session for me, although I'll take it. And I've been really open on this podcast, and I've shared my journey along the way and just my growth and development as a father and as a husband. And I've noticed, I'm really working on it. And I would say this also, that I'm getting better at the anger stuff, right? Or the sadness stuff, or the neediness. More anger and sadness for me, I think, are the dominant ones. But I noticed that that I would get really, really angry. And angry at myself, angry at other people. We could have a whole conversation about it, but I'm sharing that I'm really intimate and familiar with that. And a lot of people that know me, that see me around, or this is not, they're like, really anger? Like, what do you have to be angry about? And you don't seem really angry to me. And I wouldn't say that I am. Like, I'm not predominant, like, I'm not angry the majority of the time, but when it shows up, it's really intense. I'll get angry at, like I said, my kids. I'll get angry with my kids. And I know, even intellectually, logically, I'm thinking, doesn't make sense that I'm this angry.
Well, that's interesting, right? I don't want to get therapy session either, but...
But you can, by the way. Feel free. If I'm an open book, so you can...
I'm good. Yeah. I think you lie down on the couch there. But if you talk to any parent, it's logical to be angry at your kids. I mean, who makes us angry but the people we love the most? And the opposite of love isn't anger, it's indifference.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's where a lot of men I work with get very confused, right? I shouldn't be angry at someone I love. They have them as polar opposites. I can't be angry at somebody I love. Or the other one is, if I admit I'm angry, I'm going to hurt somebody.
Yeah.
They tie those things together. So the starting to learn about yourself is getting comfortable with the emotion that you've declared an enemy, right? Just a little bit of anxiety when you talk about anger, like, well, I don't want to be an angry person. I don't want as if being angry is going to make you an angry person or make you hurt somebody or something. But those aren't as tied. It's a whole ocean between a feeling and an action. Mm-hmm. But what these men aren't doing is accepting it in here. It's where it first has to happen, right? In between your ears, you have to be able to go, wow, I'm pissed. What am I pissed about? And be able to go through that process. But men who have declared that anger is a problem or going to hurt somebody, they can't get to that.
Yeah.
And that's the first part of venting. Venting doesn't have to be out loud. I mean, it can be in your car out loud, but you do it right in here, because sometimes you go through that whole process. Oh, I was angry at so-and-so. That's right. At lunch, he said this really pissed me off. And oh, wait a minute. I know where that comes from. That's what my mom used to do. Jeez Louise, there it is again. You know, and by the time you do that a few times, it might dissipate.
Yeah.
That's very different than burying it.
Yeah. And let me see if I understand what you're saying. Let me give you a real example. So yesterday was a little bit tougher because I didn't get in a lot of sleep the night before. Mm-hmm. And my son Ocean, who's 4, was a little extra whiny. And there was a couple of things that weren't going well. They weren't lining up. They were, you know, things were breaking and it just felt like it was snowballing, right? And I felt myself getting angry and quick and short with people in the house. Mm-hmm. And then I caught myself in doing that. And I remember I had a conversation that was, hey, you're just tired. This is actually interesting because I've been studying sleep lately and how mm-hmm. sleep is actually one of the biggest reasons that I was getting angry was that I wasn't getting enough sleep. And I just wasn't rested and the willpower tank was depleted, you know, and therefore I was flying off the handle. But last night I was able to just say to myself, what you really need, John, is just to go to sleep. You know, you're not broken. You're just tired and you're quick. And this morning I was able to say to my wife, like, hey, sorry, I was a little cranky last night. I think I was just really, really tired. And I thought, oh man, that's the way I should be handling this. That was a win for me because normally I wouldn't have been able to even notice that. More than to admit to that.
Okay, that's a win. I hear you. That's great. But what you did was you denied yourself the anger. I'm sleepy. I'm broken. Something's wrong with me. You turned it inward.
Yeah.
Where a lot of suicide thoughts come from. I'm not saying you're suicidal, but I'm saying that's the sort of general path where suicide comes from. As opposed to, I'm angry for a reason. These kids are driving me crazy.
Yeah.
That's a perfectly fine reason. There's nothing wrong with that. Doesn't mean you don't love them. Doesn't mean you're not a good dad. And then once you recognize the anger and the kids are driving you crazy, then you give yourself permission to put up a boundary to soothe that anger. Once you recognize it, it's your duty, obligation as an adult to take care of yourself first. That's the whole oxygen mask thing.
Yeah.
Right. And then say to your wife, look, you can tell I'm losing it here. This isn't working for me. So can you take the kids for a little bit till I get myself together?
Yeah. And that's the boundary.
That's the boundary setting thing. And this is why a lot of men, I see me, they aren't setting these normal boundaries because they can't admit they're angry first.
Yeah. So my boundary was going to bed.
And that is a boundary.
Yeah.
But ideally you'd say you put it together. For, I don't know if your wife is there or not, but ideally you'd put it together in your head. I'm angry. I need a boundary. I'm going to put the kids to bed. I'm going to bed.
Yeah.
But not deny that it was anger that was, you were angry.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about this, people don't do this with happiness. I always say, no one worries their happiness is going to spin out into mania. Right. You understand that happiness is felt, it'd be felt, and then it's going to dissipate. But people don't give that same intellectual idea about their any other emotion. But all emotions are the same. There's no such thing as a right or wrong emotion.
Is there a moment when somebody would say, yeah, but Laura, my anger is like, it is a problem, right? Like, when does it become like, oh, it's okay for me to be angry. Oh, it's, and when are you then a pessimist and you're negative and your anger's out of control?
That's beautiful. That's exactly where it goes. But that's the fear that they've tied anger and losing control. And I have to say, just like your laughter isn't going to get out of control and all the other emotions aren't going to get out of control, you're an adult, you have a long history of controlling yourself. But what happens is a lot of men come to me and they're like, but my anger's over the top. I punch walls, I yell and everything. And they what they do is they try to push it down even more. But that's it's like a vicious circle. It's because they aren't expressing their anger enough that it ends up blowing up. It's the build and blow routine.
So what's the healthy way to express it?
Just like we talked about with you just a minute ago. As soon as you feel that irritation or all the cousins of anger, you tell somebody or yourself, you say, hey, okay, I need to put up about, I needed some kind of protection here. I need help. I need a boundary. I need to vent. I need to deal with it. And then because you said that at least you knew you put up a boundary, go to sleep, you got the anger soothed. So it's not going to build and blow.
Yeah. Right?
But God, if you didn't, he's like, well, I got to deal with these kids. That's what I do as a dad. I'm going to just push through. And then you push through again, and you push through again. And guess what? It blows up over here.
You blow up. Yeah. So you speak it out. What I just heard you say was I speak it out. So I'm angry. And speaking it out, you said could literally be speaking it out, or it could be inside your head.
Exactly.
I'm angry. I might need to vent a little bit. And venting can be inside. That was a big one for me, right? Venting doesn't have to be out loud. You
right.
can just vent inside your head, right? But that's just acknowledging it. You're just saying, hey, it is what it is. And then I need to put up a boundary, right?
Yeah. I need to soothe it in some way. So once you do it all in your head and you figured it out, so it's like, where is it coming from? Is it really from them? Is it some history? Is it something else I haven't resolved? Once you figure it out, then the next step, that's after you've done all that, is to figure out how to soothe it.
Yeah.
But maybe telling somebody, like if it's your boss, you don't want to do that. You may need a boundary. You may not be able to do that. So then you vent to some, maybe somebody else will listen if you've already vented to yourself. So there's several things you can do, but you're not going to be able to pick the right one or the best one unless you fully have given yourself that time to unpack it all.
What are the most common causes of this neediness, anger, and sadness, these enemy emotions? What is the most common cause?
I mean, it could be anything. I mean, typically...
Is it marriage? Is it kids?
Yeah.
Is it money? Is it, you know, what is it?
Oh, no. It's always, again, that someone you love is doing something that it's not working for you.
Yeah.
And that's where it gets all broken down because this idea that the enemy emotion is somehow opposed to love.
Right.
But love really is about, or intimacy is really about exposing the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Mm.
It isn't just all butterflies and roses. That's not intimate. And this is where these men get really confused because they're like giving their wives or significant others everything, I mean, everything object wise, but they can't understand why the wife's going, it's not enough.
Yeah.
I want to know you. I want to know why you are acting tense while you're making dinner or when you come home every night. I want to know you.
Mm. I'm pausing because I'm taking notes. that's so true, right? That's so true. And let's talk a little bit about the relationship piece here for a moment. Let's talk about, again, what I'm most interested in is what you see most commonly, because I'm also wanting to speak to our whole audience, right? Like if we said, hey, maybe the question right now, Laura, is there's all these men out there listening. What do you think their common question is right now? And how can we address that for them? What do you think they're all asking? Because you know these guys, you see them all the time. So what question are they right now saying, Laura, but they're in their car, right? They're listening to this in their car or in the gym saying, here's my question. What do you think that is?
But how do I find out what my inner emotion is? What am I about bearing? What am I hiding?
Yeah.
And I always find that out by saying to them, and this can be hard to do by yourself, again, because you're so good. If you've gone this far with it, you know, you're an adult and you're bearing them. You're bearing them without knowing. Yeah. You're doing it totally unconscious and without knowing it. So you need someone to help you figure this out. But I always say to somebody when I start trying to figure out what the enemy emotion is. So for instance, if the enemy emotion is anger, they tend to cover it up by bury and blow, right? If it's neediness, pathological altruism, they'll give, hoping that'll solve it and cover up their neediness. Everybody else is needy, not me. And if it's sadness, they covered up with happiness, joking, something of the opposite. Okay. So if I start getting a sense of what it is, I'll just simply say, so how do you deal with anger typically? And if they do the whole, anger. Wow, I never get angry. Oh, I'm not angry. I'm not an angry person. Oh, Dr. Tam, don't get through. No. They start doing all the defensiveness, then I know anger is their enemy emotion. Another thing I say is, if I'm talking like on Facebook or live or something to an audience like this, I'll say, if I say to you, how do you deal with your neediness? And you go, you cringe. That's your enemy emotion.
Mm.
How do you deal with anger? Oh no, don't say that. I've had people say, when we can't use the word anger, let's use irritation.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's how much they've made that emotion an enemy.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Hey guys, I want to take a second to tell you about our Front Row Dads Retreat. If you would value connecting with a brotherhood of like-minded and like-hearted guys who want to deepen their sense of purpose and meaning as fathers and within their families, and to talk about and share the best practices and the strategies for ultimate family success, then this event might be for you. If you would value being around high-performing guys without the big egos, guys that believe in being family men with businesses and not businessmen with families, you might enjoy our Front Row Dads Retreat. Twice a year, we're getting together in person, small groups, cool locations, guest experts, and so much more for these events. We've now done this multiple times. It has sold out every single time. And if you're excited about it, make sure to check it out at frontrowdads.com, where you can apply for the next retreat. Now, hey, one of the things you might be wondering is, does leaving my family make me a better dad or husband? The answer is, for many of you, I know you travel a bunch, you do other things. And the idea for this one is you have to retreat to advance. You have to take a step back to gain the perspective so that we can go back and crush it within our families. This is the same concept that works in business, where you take a moment, you think, you plan, you strategize, you work on your family so that you can be better in your family. If that all sounds good, check it out, frontrowdads.com. I love this idea that anger will turn to blowing up somehow. Neediness turns to, and I think you said this, pathological altruism, right? Yeah. And then sadness turns to maybe like joking or an excessive happiness.
Lightness.
What's interesting is I can see my life in all three of those in such clear ways. I think I have all three at a very deep level.
It's very calm.
Because first of all, I have blown up. I have punched walls, right? I've done all that. In fact, right now I have a swollen knuckle from punching something. And it's like, I don't see myself as a violent person in any way, shape, or form. It just, honestly, when I wasn't dealing with something, I didn't know what to do with all that. And I had that blow up moment, right? So I have that in my life. I had this neediness that I'm very clear about this, that from a very, very young age, needing to fit in, needing to be loved, which we all do to some degree, right? But I know that mine felt excessive. It felt like, so I think it's actually one of the reasons that I wanted to start Front Row Foundation, was this need to like make other people feel like rock stars, to put them in the spotlight. right? And wrestling internally with this idea of like contribution and significance in my life, like one is giving just to give and the other one is giving to feel important. And I'm wrestling with that and almost making contribution better than significance, right? That somehow like the significance is very ego driven. Like, come on, John, like you need everybody to tell you you're awesome. Like you don't need all that validation. Like if you're really a strong person, you don't need anybody to tell you you're awesome, right?
And,
right. This is like, these are the internal conversations that I have.
Right. Or
that, you know, yeah, that the way to make it through sadness, because that's heavy and draining and it's a drain on other people to be sad or be sad publicly. And that, that because of that, I'm going to become the most positive person on the planet. And interestingly, a lot of those decisions have served me, right? That I think they've served a lot of people that probably, and arguably the way that they can avoid sadness and turn it to joking or to be a giver as a way of remedying their neediness has probably served them. That's probably a dangerous part of it too, right?
Right.
Because you've also been winning because of a lot of those things.
Exactly. Winning. But you don't realize the price you're paying on the flip side.
Right.
Huge.
Right.
Huge, huge, huge.
Yeah. So I got it. So that's a way that guys can identify this. So now that let's say that they've identified one of these that may be more dominant than another, or they just recognize they've got all three, right? Mm-hmm. That somehow like, yes, I can be too much of a giver. Yes, I can just joke my way through the tough stuff. Yes, I can blow up. If they've identified those, then what is the way next? What is the path for them now? Is it seeing a therapist? Is it reading a book? Is it journaling? Is it what we spoke about before? We gave them a solution, right? To speak it out loud. That was a solution. What are other ways that guys have dealt with that outside of just speaking it out loud?
Right. So that's all great questions. I try to get them to move towards accepting all those things and catching themselves when they contradict it. So you had a couple of those, right? You said, who am I to need validation? It's supposed to, I need validation. That's what I need. And being totally confident in that, right? I get sad. I don't care. It doesn't drain anybody else, first of all. People can up and leave if your sadness is bothering them. That's not your issue. Your issue is I'm sad. It's heavy for me. I need to fix this, right? So I like journaling, but what I say is journaling with a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
So people will journal. Okay, well, it's like, what do they call it? What do they say about practice? You have to practice well, not practice the wrong thing the whole time. Mm-hmm. So you got to go back and catch those phrases where you're turning on yourself. All the ways as soon as you say a feeling, you have this tendency to then invalidate it. And that's where I try to get the men I work with to get more comfortable and accept these negative feelings, what they've termed negative, because they're not negative, but they turned them negative. And let that be. And that's where I get into the whole selfish thing in my articles and such, because they'll say, but isn't that selfish? Isn't it selfish just me to sit there and think I'm sad? I'm like, why isn't it self-love? Why isn't it self-aware? Mm-hmm. You have to think about that for a minute. Well, because it's all about me. And I say, selfishness is a relative term. Your sadness being draining on somebody is a relative term. You have to start with you. And then if somebody says to you, hey, you know, your sadness is kind of going on a long time, it's kind of bothering me, or you're working all these extra hours for our vacation starting to bother me, feel it's selfish, feel like you're just sort of in yourself, I need more of you. That's when you use your empathy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's when you step outside and say, okay, well, I need to be sad. It's bothering you. What are we going to do? Where's the compromise?
Right. Yeah.
You've got to start with you. You've got to know and be comfortable with you and not worry or pretend you know how it's going to impact someone else when you don't. When they say it is when you then consider their viewpoint. That's great, but don't ditch yours. I always say no one has to die. I need to grieve still.
Right.
It's bothering you. Maybe I will grieve sometime in private so it doesn't impact you. Something like that, you come up with a compromise.
Yeah. Look, Laura, when you think about the work that you do and the purpose, fulfilling your purpose in the world, right?
Right.
When you think about the stories of men who have been like your biggest turnarounds, men that came in needing help and then they switched their lives around. I'm a story guy, right? Can you give us a story? And obviously, again, the confidential pieces, names will be changed, you know, facts can be changed. But do you have a story that comes to mind of one of the stories that makes you feel like that's why I do what I do?
Yeah, I've got lots, but I'll give you, and as you said earlier, it's really an amalgamation with several patients, very similar paths, but I have several high-end professional men who came to me sort of in the 30s. One in particular, he couldn't get out of these enemy emotions to the point where he had sacrificed his life. He had not had a relationship, was not in a long-term relationship, was living at home, could not even ask a woman out on a date. I mean, it was just absolutely, and this man was suicidal along with all the other issues he had going. Super successful, his job, just the opposite. So we worked together on his enemy emotions, and his number one was anger. He could not, his family was from South America, and they had a whole different viewpoint of how to deal with emotions. It was just a different culture. And he just got the message that he wasn't ever allowed to, not only was not allowed to be angry, but he wasn't allowed to separate from them. All separation takes some aggression. So he just wasn't comfortable with that at all. So we had to slowly get him comfortable with how aggression in working on separating can be something good for a relationship. Because he was so resentful, he would be living at home, hiding in his room. So this tension was there all the time. And it had to tell him, see, that's worse than you leaving and being happy and then coming together in an agreed get together, mm-hmm. being happy. That's better for a relationship. So slowly he got used to that idea. And then, so once he was able to separate from his family, he was able to start getting together with another woman, which is another separation from a family, right? How does a man leave his family? But by finding another woman to replace mom and dad. So I was able to do that because that felt okay. That aggression felt good. And I still get postcards from him of his four children. And he said, look, but you helped me create. We got married. So now it's four children.
Wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
Love that. That's beautiful. Laura, switching gears, and I realize I'm hopping around here, but I'm trying to get to some of the big questions I know come up with our group.
Right.
You know, in this community, and this certainly doesn't identify all marriages, that there's a lot of variations in of these partnerships. But one thing that's shown up is that with these go-getter guys that are part of our group, that many of them have wives that also are stay-at-home moms, right? Mm-hmm. And again, we have lots of people that are, both parties are working. We have some guys that are stay-at-home dads. So this is just one example. But one of the things I know that can be really frustrating is when the man is growing at such a rapid pace. They're going to all these personal growth conferences. They're going to work every day and they're sharpening the axe and having these big adult conversations, and right? And then they're pushing and they're leading and they're challenging themselves in such extraordinary ways. And that one of the frustrations that comes up is that when they feel like their partner at home is not on the same growth path, that they're not interested in reading a book a day and pushing themselves in such extraordinary ways, that that's a source of tension for some of the guys. Have you seen that show up with your high performers? How have you helped them to deal with that emotion that they feel where they wish that their spouse might have been a little more aggressive with their growth?
Well, that's really interesting. I don't see that too much, actually. What I see, maybe we're talking about the same thing, I think, is when they start learning about themselves and being comfortable with all that they want to do, right? I've gotten out of it's selfish to grow at this pace if I want to. The next step is then, how do I express it to my significant other? Mm-hmm. So I can convince them, or they're convinced, fine, they finally understand anger is okay, neediness is okay, sadness is okay. But I can't tell my wife. Mm-hmm. She'll never understand. Oh, no, no. She'll be, I'm like, what is she going to do? Well, she'll be, here's a common example I have to get a lot of, where the intimacy has died in the relationship. Mm-hmm. A lot of men come in like, oh, she doesn't seem to care. I really miss that. I need that. Okay, so what keeps you from telling her? Oh, she'll be so upset. She works so hard with the kids. She doesn't have a job, but she just does so much for the family, and she'll be so hurt and all this stuff. But that's really just them not accepting. Do you see? I mean, they're saying it's wrong and bad to have this feeling and this need. They're projecting that onto their significant other.
Yeah.
I would challenge your crew. Why does your spouse or significant other have to be at the same growth rate that you are? That rarely happens.
Yeah.
I mean, she's got her own path. You've got yours. Why does it matter that she's on a different one? So I would challenge them to say, what is it exactly that's bothering you? You know, is she not listening? Does she not care about what you're doing? There's something else going on. There's something more personal that's going on. And then to be able to say, the next step is getting not only comfortable in your head, but then being able to say, and I always give the template, I feel X when you do Y. You feel like you're not listening to me. You feel very frustrated. You don't listen to me when I'm telling you about this meeting that I just went to.
Yeah. You brought up intimacy. Let's go there for a minute. What can our guys learn about intimacy and connecting with their spouses? And in your situation, in your understanding, and again, we're just speaking in generalities here, is it most of the time that the guys want more intimacy with their wives and the wives do not? Or do you find it's just half and half?
It actually does seem to be more guys want more intimacy and women have let it fade. But I will say, every time a guy has pushed through and has said, I need more intimacy, the women respond. They're like, I didn't know. I didn't even know we were on a different page there, you know? So it does seem to be something more the men complain about.
Can you give us a real story there of something that was like, hey, there is a guy, here's his challenge, and you know, here's how he solved it. I know that you just gave an anecdote there of like, hey, you know, you just had to say, I want more sex. And are we defining intimacy as sex? Or because I realize that term does not necessarily mean just sex.
This is the other stereotype that's actually not true, is where men actually want the cuddling, the closeness, the romantic stuff, all of it with sex. I mean, but that stereotype is, I haven't seen hold out that men want sex and women want everything else. It's typically more encompassing than just the sex. The sex is very important to men and to women, but there are lots of men who feel that they've let it go because they fear that saying it somehow is going to hurt their significant other. But I keep saying, why would you, if it's so important to you, how can you be ditching yourself? You're ditching yourself when you're not addressing it with your partner.
Right.
You know, you're kidding yourself that you're protecting her by not telling her, but you're hurting you, which thus hurts the relationship because you're half the relationship.
Right.
So I have to turn it around a lot because I get in this kind of rut of if this, then that. And they oversimplify these things a great deal. But I start with the whole intimacy is transparency. Mm-hmm. Intimacy, a lot of men do that pathological altruism because I was talking about earlier where intimacy is making you happy. Mm-hmm. So if you're not happy, it's my fault. They become the project as opposed to you should be the project.
Right.
You know? And then you can reveal about you to somebody else. And again, it is about saying, I want more sex, but to say it in a way that she can hear you. I always hear about these I statements, but it's not the I statements. It's I and you're revealing something, I and a feeling. Mm-hmm. That way it doesn't come across as critical, demanding, trying to change her, trying to fix her, all that other stuff, which most I statements come across as, I think you need to get some help. I think you need to go see the doctor. Something's wrong with you. You don't want sex with much anymore.
Right?
As opposed to, I miss you in our sex life.
When you think about a relationship that's thriving and healthy, because you see them both, right? Ones that are strained and ones that are going extremely well, or that have, you know, maybe transitioned to an extremely healthy relationship.
Right.
How much sex do you find that your couples that are thriving in the intimacy department, how much sex are they having? Like, this is a question that comes up, is like, how much sex is normal? Like, especially for a married couple. I've heard the guys are like, I haven't had sex in months. And I have couples that I know that are like, we have sex every day.
Well, okay, so in the literature in mental health, the average sex rate in happy couples is once a week or once every other week. That's the
average. For happy couples.
For happy couples.
Once a week, once every other week.
Yes.
Some guys are listening going, we're doing great.
And some guys are saying, that's not enough for me.
That would make me a lot happier. Yeah.
Right. So the more personal in my, you know, between my patient and I in our four walls here is that coming up with the compromise. Because it isn't just amount, it's positions, it's times, it's, you know, all that. And, or privacy. I mean, that's another thing where I see a lot of couples where, so the college kid comes home and the wife's like, we can't have sex. They might hear.
Yeah.
And the guy's going, what? Bring me home for a month. We're not doing that. So it's, again, being able to, like every issue in a marriage, you have to be able to say, look, this is what I need. I'm hearing you say you need something different. We got to work this out.
Yeah.
That's the whole, the problem is our problem is the problem.
Yeah.
Not you spouse are the problem.
One of my buddies, Tony, runs one of the top marriage podcasts, if not the top marriage podcast in the world. And when I asked him about what's the most popular topic, it's sex, right? Do you think that at the core of most relationship challenges, is it sex? Is that at the base of it?
This is my theory. And this is where I think men have the disadvantage that we have not been able to, we're now starting to vocalize in our society. And that is that men were not encouraged to deal with their emotions. Women have been much more comfortable with it. I always ask my friends, son came home from college and said, hey, I decided I want to be a stay-at-home dad. What would you say? And they all go, oh, you know, they can't handle that. We are handling it more in our society. We are accepting it more.
Sure.
But it's been a long time. Women be able to say both for a long time.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think men often put a lot of their emotion into sex.
Mm-hmm.
They say they want sex because either they do, which is understandable, or that's where they're able to get some emotion out, or they're not able to say something else. I need you to be around more. I need you to connect with me more. I need you to. It's okay for a man to say, I need more sex. Not okay to say, I need you home with me more.
Hmm. Interesting. Yeah, I think this has been a big subject, by the way, for our group is the marriage. Like we talk about, this is front row dads, right? But to be a great dad, a lot, you know, you really need to have a great partnership. And to have a great partnership, a lot of that is your intimacy. And at the core of intimacy for a lot of people is their sex life. So I'm glad that we're talking about it because even just it feels sometimes like, oh, this isn't the right time to bring that up. Right. Mm-hmm. Or that makes me creepy to bring up the sex topic. But yet I think if you look at society as a whole and you look even at like the driving force behind a human being, I think it's a subject we've got to get into and have some honest conversation about.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think it's really good. Well, hey, I know we're coming up on our time here. I wanted to ask one more thing, just circling back to something that you had said earlier. And I want to just take a little bit of a deeper dive into this is the boundary setting idea, right? This conversation about boundary settings. So can you give us a story there on somebody that had learned to set a boundary and it worked in their favor and created success for them?
I had a high ranking official in the military who was very subservient to everybody, including his wife and his parents. This is another common thing that is not talked about even in our literature, where a lot of men have their foot in their original home, still trying to please their parents and try to please their wife and their family. And that never works. Well, he was one of those people because he couldn't put up a boundary with his parents and he's in his 40s. So we had to really make him a bad son. He was definitely one of these golden child people. So slowly, I mean, this was the extremes he would go to please them, even though they had never spoken this, but there was an underlying message. Like if he didn't send a certain gift on a certain holiday, or if he didn't receive all their gifts with some fanfare, that they would be angry. Like, so we had to keep working through, okay, so who's angry? You know, so we had to work through his anger at them for all this, setting this all up, his anger at them for not being able to let go. And then finally, when he was able to accept that, putting up boundaries. Very, very poignant and painful for him to do this because they did show some anger. They distanced from him in a little bit. They would call and say, what's wrong with you? Why are you doing this? So, but he had to hold firm. And as he did that, interestingly enough, he was able to get closer to his wife. He's letting go of them. But then their relationship started to improve. He didn't even come in with that as a complaint. But she started saying, wow, you know, now you're more present with me because you're not giving to them all the time. Their relationship improved. He had some dreams he had written off. They had these dreams. Like, for instance, one was to buy a house on the water. He had written that off. It was too needy, et cetera, et cetera. He then couldn't give to his parents as much as he wanted. So that all culminated with him calling me after he left and everything was fixed with his wife. He had the boundaries with his parents. He actually called me and said that he bought the house on the water. And in his head the whole time, he talked to my lawyer and said, I hear you, Dabney, saying, he called me Dabney, I hear you saying, what do you want? What do you want? Just focus on what you want and what you need. That's really very moving.
Yeah, you know, that's such a great phrase, is what do you want? And I've talked about that on this show, and a lot of guys know that this has shown up in many different parts of my life, is understanding what I want. And I want to thank my friend Tim for bringing this question to me, because when I used to ask, what do I want? That to me felt very selfish. Like, what do I want? And I realized that's at the core of who I am, is like, if I really think about what I want, that's selfish, because I'm thinking just about me and not other people. However, I've come to realize that when I really get clear about what I want, that the stronger I can be, and not becoming totally selfish, not totally self-absorbed, but to know what I want strengthens me so that I can serve others. And there's 1,000 ways that we talk about giving to yourself so that you can give to others, right? There's 1,000 ways that we've brought that up. You mentioned the oxygen mask, which is probably the most quoted, you know, example of that. But that is what we do, right? When we figure out what we want, we figure out who we are, when we figure out why we want to be here, what drives us, what are our needs, it's okay to be a little needy, right? Well, those are just, that's another way of saying we all have needs, right? Yeah. You know, what are they? That's another way of saying it. It's okay to experience the full realm of emotions, and that it's okay to say, you know, that you're angry and that you're sad. And then what do you want to get free of that? What do you need? What do you want? That's a big question that I would encourage the guys to sit with today, because you a lot of times we do that in business. What do I want in business? But we fail to do that in our personal lives, or in our marriages, or with our families, is what do we really want? What's the vision? What's driving us? Who do we need to become along the way in order to get all those things that we want to achieve in life?
It's the same. It's so beautiful. All I'm going to add is that you also in business tell people what you need.
Yeah, that's right.
You don't hope they figure it out, or if I keep giving to you more and more money, you're going to figure out what I need. We verbalize that. But you're right. When it gets to our personal lives, we somehow don't.
Well, and I talk about this with our guys, is bringing the best of your work home, right? It's like you've got all these talents and all these skills at work, and sometimes you just come home and then you just think that your job is to show up and love people, which, yeah, that's part of it. But the other thing is, bring the skills that have worked for you in your business and bring them home, adapt them to your family life. And, you know, a lot of times if we did that, we'd actually be better at home, right? This isn't bringing the worst of your work home. This isn't bringing your work personality per se home. It's bringing the skills that we've developed there and applying them in a loving way to our families. And I think that could be really good. Not treating your wife or your kids like employees or contractors. It's understanding that some of the ways in which you treat those people, you could treat your family and benefit from.
Yeah, right? You have to be able to, can't worry so much about the self-absorption. You shouldn't worry about that at all. Exactly. That's what the definition of an adult is, being able to take care of yourself. We take care of yourself first, and then you can share the best of you with the other people. If you bury those negative emotions, there is absolutely no way. This is why Vietnam vets come in here now, and they're telling me, why do I still have these emotions? Because you haven't been able to deal with them. Yeah. You have to deal with them, and then you'll be a better person, and long run, that resentment won't be there.
So cool. Laura, is there anything else that you want to say to these guys out there listening? Anything that we just didn't get to that you think is important to communicate to the front row dads?
Yeah, just one more thing, John, and we've touched on this before, I think, but the whole positivity movement that we've talked about and mindfulness and everything, a lot of people are misusing that. There's just another way to bury. I'm just going to look at the positive, and the tears are coming down their face and they don't even know what they're there for. Positivity is a result. Got to deal with all the negative emotions. Let them be, let them dissipate, and then positivity will come into that space.
Beautiful. Beautifully said. If somebody out there is listening, Laura, and they're like, I need help. I want to talk to somebody like you. They don't live in Virginia Beach, and I don't know that you do remote work at all. Maybe you do.
I do.
Okay, great. So what could they do to both find somebody, find their Laura Dabney, right? That either they, A, how do we contact you? Or B, if they want to get somebody, if they want to do something in person and they don't live in Virginia Beach, how would they go find somebody to help them?
Well, first of all, anybody can call me anytime. 757-340-8800. If I can't help you, we do have a service where my staff is trained to look up people in your area who do the kind of work that I do. They'd be glad to take down your specifics, and we would help narrow that search down for you, because it can be overwhelming to find somebody.
Yeah.
I also, if you're okay with me sharing a link, John, I have lauradabney.com/frontrowdads for a longer article on all this, all we talked about today.
Great. That's fantastic. Really appreciate that. So lauradabney.com/frontrowdads. Mm-hmm. We'll put that in the notes. And thank you again, Laura, for being here, opening up, and thanks for the work that you're doing. I mean, obviously, like, we're getting a wonderful call with you today, but it's a result of you spending countless years researching, mm-hmm. learning, listening, and helping people along the way. So really appreciate you. This has been a wonderful chat. So much value here.
Well, that's the same with me. I mean, I would love to see how you've done it a different way than I have, but we're both doing the same thing, and that's getting people to be their best selves ever. So I congratulate you as well for all you've done.
And it's so important, right, for our wives or our partners and our kids, and that we get a chance to stop the passing along in our generation some of the things that are unhealthy and start passing along the things that are, so that we can create some momentum here and save the world is what we're after.
Exactly.
Awesome. Laura, thanks again for being with us today. Really appreciate you.
Thank you, John. Appreciate it too.
Hey guys, if you haven't already done so, go right now to frontrowdads.com/Facebook and join the conversation that's happening right now online. We designed this group for guys who are entrepreneurial in their thinking. They're high performing guys with low egos. We're looking for the dads that believe in teaching their kids how to think, solve problems, and be real leaders. We're looking for guys who believe in being family men with businesses, not businessmen with families. We're looking for the fathers who have great knowledge, but also believe that they have so much more to learn. And we're looking for men who want to add value by sharing their wisdom, and those that are willing to ask the questions that we all need and want answers to. That's frontrowdads.com/Facebook, or simply go to Facebook, type in Front Row Dads, and you'll get to our group. And what we put in there, links to all the podcasts and videos and other resources that you can't get access to anywhere else except for in this group. We want to give you the best ideas to help you with your marriage, balancing work and family life, communication strategies with your spouse and also your children, travel ideas, and even suggestions on the latest gear that would save you time and help you be more effective. We've got updates on upcoming events and so much more. Go right now to frontrowdads.com/Facebook and join the conversation. I'll look forward to connecting with you there.